Welcome to At the Letters for Thursday, May 30th, 2024. Ben Nicholson-Smith here with you, alongside Arden Zwelling. This week's episode produced by Sho Ali and Nick Andrade. So thanks to both of them for helping us bring you this podcast, and thanks to you for listening. As we discuss the Blue Jays and, you know, another week of highs and lows for this team. Arden, it just seems like this is the nature of playing baseball when every game matters so much. When you've dug yourself such a hole that there really is no room for error, every loss, every win, it's all magnified.
Yeah, it's the nature of baseball season, though, too, isn't it? Like, it's just 6 months of highs, lows, peaks, valleys, ebbs, flows. You just want to try to sustain your peaks a bit longer than your valleys and hope that, you know, in the words of Jerry DePoto, you win 54% of the time or better.
Oh, man. Let's not take that particular quote as inspiration for this podcast, but certainly some front office executives would draw inspiration from that.
Hey, man, that's like 88 to 89 wins. That's a third wild card spot, man. That's a seat and a chip.
And that is the best case scenario for the Blue Jays right now. I mean, they are just completely out. Here we are on May, and like, they are not going to win the division. Like, that is off the table. But they are not totally out of the race for the wild card. They just swept the Chicago White Sox this week as we're recording this. They're now 26 and 29. They're four games behind the final wild card spot. But Arden, they've got to pass five teams to get there. Like, just on a high level, big picture level, where are you at with this team's chances?
They're moving in the right direction since we last spoke. They're 4-3 over the seven games that they've played since. So that's a start. They got to start moving back towards 500 instead of just hanging out where they were or losing ground as they often were. The Fangraphs playoff odds right around 20% right now. Not that different than last we spoke. Not that different than going into the White Sox series even. And that is because those playoff odds based off Zips and Steamer bake in an assumption that the Blue Jays will beat up on the White Sox. An assumption that, honestly, the Blue Jays would at least split, if not take 3 or 4 against the Tigers. And lo and behold, they actually lost 3 or 4 against the Tigers. So look, you can go 5-1 over the 6 that they've played against the White Sox over the last couple of weeks, and that's great, but that's the assumption from the objective projection models, and that is also the assumption from the subjective projection model inside my brain. Like, I assume that they should be able to do that. If they didn't do that, there'd be major problems. So good for them for taking care of business. 2 out of 3 should be the expectation against the Pirates this weekend. A sweep would be great, but, you know, it's hard to sweep teams consistently. 2 out of 3 is the expectation, and then you got 4 against the Orioles next week. And as teams like the Orioles and the Guardians and the Mariners and the Yankees and the Astros, those are the teams that you need to beat, that you need to make up ground against. That's how you can meaningfully improve your standing and your projection going forward, is by beating those teams. So good for the Blue Jays for taking care of business, but much more work still to be done.
Yeah, and the pressure remains on, and it should be on this team because they dug themselves a hole. That's the thing, right? Is going into that series against the White Sox, they were 6 games under 500. I mean, coming out of that Detroit series on the weekend, like, it was a weird vibe. I was covering that series for Sportsnet Digital, and you get this kind of mixed messaging because players coming out of that series were like, oh, we're so happy that we were able to hit and have this huge comeback in the Sunday game and like really get the bats going. But end of the day, they lost. So it's really past the point of wanting silver linings. But then they go ahead and do take care of business, and they kind of did build on that offensive momentum against the White Sox, and they're able to sweep. So that is a necessary step, but because they played so poorly for so long, 2 months into the season, dug themselves such a big hole, now they're still, you know, objectively unlikely to make the playoffs. And this is the weird thing, is you look at them this time of year and it's kind of like, okay, they could get back to 500. I mean, if they have a great weekend, they're back to 500 if they sweep the Pirates. And then it's kind of like anything goes at that point. If you're 500 with 4 months to play in a league where 6 teams make the playoffs, like, you've definitely got a shot. So they're within striking distance of having a shot, but that's still a leap. They still haven't played the Pirates or swept the Pirates. And, you know, it could go, they could get to 500 and hopes could get high, and then they can go 2-7 and then fall entirely out of it. So there's time for all sorts more ebbs and flows with this thing.
Yeah, all kinds of things could happen to you in life. The Blue Jays are hitting better. Like, they've top 10 in batting average, OBP, and WRC plus in the month of May. That's good. Like, that's what you want. I mean, this is a team that needed to produce more offensively, and it has done so of late. What remains to be seen is just how much the context of the quality of competition had to do with that. Like, the Chicago White Sox were some pretty good hitting. And they were playing some pretty poor defense behind their pretty poor pitchers. So it's just imperative for the Blue Jays to carry this over against better pitchers from the Orioles and better pitchers from the Brewers and the Guardians and the Red Sox and some of these teams that they're going to play going forward. So you want to see George Springer continuing to take his walks and turning on fastballs. You want to see Isaiah Kiner-Falefa continuing to keep the ball off the ground and pulling the ball a bit more. You want to keep seeing Bo Bichette taking shots and taking chances. Keep seeing Vladimir Arise coming up with a hit every time he's at the plate. Keep seeing Davis Schneider making his adjustments, Dave Jansen getting into the pull power, and Alejandro Kirk coming up with more hits, etc. Like, you want to see all of those encouraging signs that we've seen over the last few weeks continue and sustain as the Blue Jays encounter some pitchers of a higher caliber than they were seeing on the south side of Chicago.
To what extent do you buy into this Blue Jays offense being, closer, kind of what it's been for the last couple of weeks? Because the last couple of weeks, they've been pretty good. They're sixth in baseball in WRC plus in the last 14 days. But, that's a small sample.
I don't know, man, because like, the Blue Jays offense hasn't made sense at any point this season. Like, I certainly didn't expect George Springer to look like he did in his prime this season, but I also didn't expect him to be like a 68 WRC plus guy as he was like 2 months into May. I didn't expect Vlad and Bo to get out to the starts that they did. Likewise, I didn't expect Dave Jansen to be as hot as immediately as he was coming off of the IL. And I didn't expect Davis Schneider to be like one of the best hitters in baseball. I didn't expect Justin Turner to repeat what he did last year in his age 39 season, but I also did not expect him to be borderline unplayable as he has been throughout the month of May. So none of it, honestly, has really made much sense to me offensively. Like, anything that you would have like reasonably expected from these hitters has not been what's played out. So part of that is also just like the nature of looking at hitters in small samples. Like, you just need 5-6 months worth of plate appearances to really get a sense of like who a guy is. It really, you just have to let some of this stuff normalize. But it's a long-winded way of saying I don't know what to expect going forward. I'm open-minded to all possibilities.
We're all in this on this ride trying to see what happens. But if I had to guess, I would think that the Jays are a middle of the pack offense going forward. I think that what we've seen from them in the last couple of weeks, I mean, that might be their best 2 weeks of the year offensively, with Vladdy going off and Davis Schneider at leadoff. Waited way too long to do that, but once they did, that was the right call, and that has helped them. So the results have been really good. But on the season, they're a 101 WRC plus right now. They are 23rd in runs scored, a reflection of some sequencing that just hasn't worked for them. So yeah, I would project them as like an okay, maybe a bit below average offense. I think Vladdy has more in the tank. I think Davis Schneider, I mean, you can't deny this guy. At this point, Davis Schneider, like 4 months, the opposition has had time to make adjustments against him and find ways to get him out, and they just haven't done it. So I kind of believe in Davis Schneider at this point as an above average major league player, not the, borderline, is he going to be an everyday player that he was a couple months ago? I think clearly he's deserving of the opportunity that he's getting. And you have guys like Bo Bichette who are coming around. George Springer finally hit a home run off a fastball. That's a good step forward. But, at the same time, like here's like one of the probably two times a year I'll cite RBI on At the Letters. But, George Springer has 11 RBI. And like that kind of does reflect a little bit of the struggles offensively that he's gone through this season.
So much of like being a good offense overall does just kind of come down to timing and sequencing, and in some cases luck, and in others just like getting big hits, big swings in big spots. Like, you can look at the discrepancy in performance with runners in scoring position for this club between April and May. In April, like, the worst team at hitting with runners in scoring position, no matter what metric you prefer, batting average, slugging percentage, hard hit rate, WRC plus, etc. In May, top 10 club hitting with runners in scoring position. Like, a pretty stark reversal there. You can look at, you know, the weirdness of the Blue Jays production in the first inning versus the second inning. In the first inning, the Blue Jays, one of the worst hitting teams in baseball. In the second, the best hitting team in baseball. So, you know, this year has just been another example of just like how weird offense and hitting can be, like how many factors and variables are at play in it, and just how difficult it can be to predict and project going forward. I think in a lot of respects, pitchers are a lot more projectable than hitters in this game, and it's something that's kind of been reiterated to me this year.
Yeah, that's all fair for sure. That the runners in scoring position stuff, we're reminded of it every year, it seems. Can't necessarily bottle that and just give yourself a couple drops of it every week. Like, it's gonna just happen when it happens. You know, you mentioned earlier in the podcast, Vladdy, you know, as kind of a Luis Arias type hitter, you know, the Dominican Ichiro here for the Blue Jays.
And Ichiro with no speed.
Yeah. Although, hey, Vladdy gets going once in a while.
Right. Ichiro who doesn't steal bases. How about that?
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So Vladdy, so he's got 5 homers right now, 25 RBI. Now that we're going down the RBI rabbit hole, I'm just going to stick with that. He's got an 802 OPS, 389 on base, 412 slugging.
And the 0-2 pitch. Swing and a liner, center field, sinking and down for a base hit. Biggio around third. He'll come in to score. Jansen stops at second. It's a four-hit day for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
You know, we're a third of the way through the season right now. So if you're the Blue Jays, would you hit times 3 on those numbers and accept like a 15 homer, 75 RBI season where Vladdy has an 802 OPS that's good for a 133 WRC plus, he's playing every day? Would you roll the dice or would you take that times 3?
You can't turn away what you're getting right now, honestly. Like, if this guy, like, what he's up to, I don't know if he's over 300 yet, but he's near
294.
It. Yeah, right. I mean, if he's gonna hit 294 with like the OPS over 800 for the rest of the year, I don't think you're going to turn that down.
I agree.
Obviously, you would like to see some more power for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's sitting at 5 home runs 2 months into the season. So Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on pace for 15 home runs is borderline shocking for the power that he's demonstrated, for the exit velocity, the barrels, how hard he hits the ball. Like, I mean, you know, on those leaderboards, like, he is up there with Judge, Otani, Soto, Stanton. Like, pick your incredible power threat. And Vladdy's up there. The thing that, you know, stands out to me this year is the sweet spot percentage, which is basically StatCast's way of quantifying how often you get like the optimal launch angle in order to do damage. So whatever that range is of launch angle that leads to, I don't know where they set the cutoff at, like 500 slug or whatever it is. Like, Vladdy just has not been getting that point of contact consistently. He's hitting a lot of ground balls and he's hitting a lot of balls that are like too straight up. So if he can get back to kind of that line drive contact, that like that classic Vladdy like arcing homer, that's just a line drive that never comes down, that's just like on a line, a frozen rope as it were, you'll probably see some more power. But like, yeah, if he finishes the year 294 average plus 800 OPS and 15 homers, I don't think you can like be too disappointed in that. I mean, that's gonna be pretty easily like a 4 or 4.5 win season.
Right. I mean, I agree with you. I agree. And I think Vladdy's gonna do better than this. But I think if you're given the choice of do you take that or do you roll the dice, you take it. And I brought up Ichiro's page here on Baseball Reference just for fun. 2005, Ichiro 15 bombs, 68 RBI, hit 300, OPS just shy of 800. He had 3.9 WAR that season. Like, if Vladdy gives you that Ichiro season, like, I think you're okay with it. It's not what anyone projected. It's the weirdest thing. But, I mean, it's productive.
Yeah, that's a 4.5 win season. Like, how many hitters do that a year? Like, 20, 25 guys?
Yeah,
you'll take that.
I mean, there are some bigger questions that I'm sure, you know, as the summer progresses, we'll discuss, you know, with respect to Vladdy and his future and Bo and his future. I don't think that there's, and this kind of ties back to the Blue Jays as a whole here, but I just don't think that there's a particular urgency at this point in time on May 30th to determine, is Vladdy the franchise player? Is Bo Bichette going to be, you know, signed to a 7-year deal as the shortstop of this team? Are the Blue Jays going to buy? Are the Blue Jays going to sell? Like I said before, they might get to 500. They might, you know, fly a few games above 500, then lose 8 in a row. I mean, this team definitely capable of losing 8 in a row. So even if they get above 500, I mean, I'm not that confident that they're going to stay there. So it could be this whole ride, you know, for the next couple months. And really, the decision is not one that you can make right now. It's not one that you should attempt to make today. You know, that could, if you lose 10 in a row, then the decision's been made for you already. But as long as they're going 4-3 or 3-3, then you just continue to play it out.
And if they do sell, I would be really surprised if they traded Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or Bo Bichette at this deadline. Like, I just don't think that that's going to be in the cards. Like, as we've talked about in the past, it would be more of a reset, recalibrate, refresh, whatever you want to call it. It would be a soft sell of anybody on you know, who's pending free agent at the end of the year, and you'd be trying to like acquire some talent, not only prospects but perhaps even like current major league players with a bit of controllability who can help you win in 25 and 26. Because look, you're like, the Blue Jays aren't going to tank. Like, they aren't going to say we're going to lose 100 times in 2025 and try to pick high in the draft and rebuild this thing entirely. That's just not going to be what they do in 2025. They're going to try to be competitive. So in any trade, the Blue Jays need to be gaining value, like, as a rule. So you think about the value of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette contributing to a team that the Blue Jays intend to contend in 2025 as star players, you know, not superstar players, but like very, very good players in their prime. There's a lot of value there, them contributing to that 2025 club. So any kind of offer for Vlad or Bo would need to exceed that value, and it's kind of hard to see a team exceeding that in their offer to the Blue Jays, where they say, okay, we like have to pull the trigger on this deal because the value is so good.
Yeah, it's, yeah, like, is any team really going to give up the James Wood, CJ Abrams, Mackenzie Gore package that the Nationals were able to get for Juan Soto? No, I mean, that was a player who's way better than Vladdy, you know, based on his track record in the major leagues, is much, much, much more productive player. And Soto had 2.5 years of control at that point, whereas Vladdy has 1.5. So it's just, it's apples and oranges. You're not getting that kind of return. I do not see Ross Atkins saying, hey, Mark, yeah, you know, we're getting a, you know, an offer for the Mariners, like, 8th and 13th best prospects. Should we trade Vlad Jr. for that? Like, I just don't see that happening. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that both Vladdy and Bo, for different but overlapping reasons, are likely to be here. And their production on the field will go a long way toward determining whether the Blue Jays are in slight buy mode or in slight sell mode. But I think those are probably the two modes that they end up in come July 30th.
And that's not going to stop the rumor and speculation and innuendo from spinning and spinning and spinning throughout July. You know, as unlikely as it is that the Blue Jays trade Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette, like, you're going to hear a lot of that talk and a lot of that speculation out there. And I think it's important to keep in mind just how unlikely it is that the Blue Jays would find that offer, as you were saying, that they would find palatable. I mean, you're already seeing, like, you know, speculation about the Blue Jays being interested in Ryan McMahon. And, like, yes, of course they're interested in Ryan McMahon. They would be interested in adding a left-handed hitter who can play third base or second base or corner outfield, who has controllability beyond this season, because they're going to try to win in 2025 and likely 2026 as well. So they would love to acquire somebody who is good and hits from the left side and who will play for them in 25 and 26. The thing is, if you call the Colorado Rockies about Ryan McMahon right now, they hang up the phone. They won't even talk to you about him. They don't want to hear
Rockies
names.
Baseball, baby.
that's it, though. They don't want to hear proposals. They don't want to hear your structures. They don't want to hear about how, oh, hey, wait a second, this will actually be really good for you guys going forward and good for us. It's such a win-win for both franchises. Like, you can't even start the conversation with them. They are not trading Ryan McMahon. Their owner likes him. They feel like he's an important part of what they're trying to do going forward. And Ben, if you can surmise what the Rockies are trying to do going forward, please tell the other 29 front offices, because they are also trying to surmise it. But like, it's, that's just not something that is going to happen, or is extremely unlikely that that is going to happen. So look, the Blue Jays, as a team that has a lot of talent on their roster right now, is a team that spends a whole lot of money, is a team that had like very high expectations this year that to this point they have not met. They're going to be in the center of all kinds of trade speculation and rumor and innuendo leading up to the trade deadline. Whether it's realistic or unrealistic, everybody's got to be a critical thinker about that. But you're going to hear the names Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette splashed around a lot in July if this season continues the way that it has.
Mariners interested in Vlad Guerrero Jr. Padres asked about Vlad Guerrero Jr. Dodgers showing interest in Bo Bichette. I mean, yeah, all of that's on the table. And
every day on Trade Rumors, every single day.
Yeah, every day. And on, you know, social media, we'll see it everywhere. And this is, that is
five trade packages for Bo Bichette.
Sure.
MLB 10 Network. Potential landing spots for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Brace yourself. Like, that's the sort of stuff that that could very well happen. And the only way to insulate yourself against that possibility, if you're the Blue Jays, is to just win way more games than they have. Well, and if you're hovering around 500 or below 500, as the Blue Jays are, you got to deal with that. That's stuff that these guys are already facing. You know, those rumors and possibilities, like, of course, it doesn't escape the players on that team. They're well aware of what it would mean for them if they continue playing under 500. So in the meantime, all they can do is you know, try to bank as many wins as they can, get above 500. That's going to be easier said than done, because, you know, you're not going to play the White Sox and Pirates forever. So they really have to take advantage of this weekend and then hold their own against the Orioles and then go and see what happens from there. But yeah, it's a challenge for these guys, and those rumors aren't going anywhere.
Hey, at least not the Mets.
That's right. Hey, that's right.
The Mets have like a $300 million payroll, and they're 11 games under 500. We're recording this on Thursday. So yesterday, Wednesday. On Wednesday alone, Edwin Diaz to the IL. Pete Alonso takes a pitch off his hand and leaves the game. I'm not sure if there's been any news about that, but it didn't look good. And Jorge Lopez has like the day of all days where he allows a billion runs and launches his glove into the stands, has this bizarre media veil, and then gets DFA'd. That was just Wednesday. Like, that was just an afternoon in Mets land. You know, you think the Blue Jays have it bad? Like, the Mets, like, just this month have lost 10 games by one or two runs. They've lost 9 games in which they held the lead entering the eighth. They've lost 5 of their last 6 in extra innings. They've hit in an extra inning 14 times this season. So they have started an extra inning frame with a runner on second 14 times and scored in only 4. So you could be the Mets.
You could. I will say this, though. I actually think the Blue Jays have had a worse year
than the Mets.
Yes.
Come on.
Because of expectations. Because the Mets, going into this year, everyone knew David Stearns is brought in. Okay, you know, he's going to kind of reset. They have these weighty contracts from the previous regime. They're going to try to, you know, hopefully contend. But it wasn't like the pinnacle of this, you know, this years in the making buildup like the Blue Jays have had. So I actually think, relative to expectations, the Jays have had a worse year.
I mean, the Mets had a $300 million payroll. On opening day, they had 30% playoff odds. So yes, less than the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays were up around 50. So admittedly, like, not expected to be as good as the Jays were this year. But I think also just the context of what a calamity like each day has been, and how much like off-field drama there's been around the Mets, and just how like you even listen to their broadcasts right now and their broadcasters are just in like open contempt of the baseball that they have to like analyze and describe for the audience. I think that, you know, for all those reasons, the Mets have had a worse year than the Blue Jays, even though the expectations were different entering.
Well, hopefully we don't get to a point that, you know, you and Dan and Buck are, you know, openly just roasting the Blue Jays on the broadcast. Still a lot of time. good or bad. But we'll step away for a moment here on At the Letters. There's still actually a ton of pitching to get to, so we'll touch on Alek Manoah and the rest of the Blue Jays pitching staff when we continue here on ATL. Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Welcome back to At the Letters, and we made it through the first half of the podcast without even mentioning the biggest news surrounding the Blue Jays, which of course was the departure of Alek Manoah from Wednesday's game due to some discomfort, some soreness in his right pitching elbow. He described a kind of pinching feeling to Shai Davidi and others after the game.
Kind of just felt really pinchy, and at that point, like, mentally, I was just like, do I keep grinding through this and maybe make it worse, or just hand the ball to somebody else?
So at this point, as we record this, we're not exactly sure what kind of absence we're looking at, but Arden, I mean, I would be personally surprised, given the circumstances, if this doesn't at least lead to a stint on the injured list.
Yeah, it's so tough, right? We're recording this on Thursday. He's having his MRI today. So, the Blue Jays are probably only just learning of the results of it and having that MRI looked at by a few professionals. And, I don't think either of us are orthopedists, and, unless you've had some education recently that I'm unfamiliar with. So it doesn't make...
There's none. Just to clear that up, no, we're good. You can proceed.
Doesn't make any sense to speculate, right? Because there's such a wide range of outcomes here, right? And the hope is that it's something towards the better end of it, and it can be treated conservatively, and it's not too long of an absence or too disruptive to his career. Of course, there are also really, really bad outcomes at the other end of that spectrum, and there's ligaments, muscles, nerves, there's all kinds of stuff in there. So we'll see what we learn on Friday, and that'll kind of help shape expectations going forward. But like, you could kind of tell in that outing early on that like Alek wasn't feeling like himself. He wasn't really releasing pitches with like the conviction that we've seen from him.
Seemed
like
he didn't.
Yeah, the velo stuck out for sure. Seemed like he didn't really trust himself when he was extending down the mound. Like, it seemed like he wasn't just letting pitches rip. Like, that was noticeable. And then whenever you see a guy on the mound, like, kind of clenching his fist and making that motion, that's always, like, a huge red flag. And then, obviously, John Schneider, comes out after that pitch in the second inning, and it's just a very brief conversation, which tells you that, like, there was an awareness going in to that outing that, Alek Manoah may not be out there for too long. So, yeah, some questions in the staff going forward, not only him but Chris Bassitt as well, who like gutted it through a neck injury earlier on in the week, whenever that start was, in a outing
Monday.
That's on Monday, yeah, an outing that it sounded like in the bullpen he wasn't even sure if he was going to make it to the mound, and then when he was on the mound he wasn't even sure if he was going to make it past one batter. So that's also a question as well. It's just like what his availability is going to be going forward. So some very suspect pitching depth on the starting side about to be tested for the Blue Jays, it seems.
For sure. I mean, Manoah in particular had kind of started to emerge. Of course, his fourth start was not very good against the Tigers, but his previous two against the Twins and Rays had been really, really good. So there was a time in the course of our last couple podcasts where, the Blue Jays rotation looked to be as strong as it had been at any point in recent memory. So that has shifted, as it tends to do with pitching injuries. And like you said, with Manoah, we can't know exactly. I mean, sometimes if there's something structural, you're looking at, long-term, that's not good. If it's not structural, then, maybe it's like Kyle Bradish, Garrett Cole, these guys rest. They end up missing some time, but they come back and they're still really effective. So, that's kind of a medium case scenario. And the best case scenario at this point would seem to me to be that you basically have Manoah on the injured list for, 10 days, a couple weeks. He doesn't miss too much time and then he's back, but certainly not assuming that that's going to be the case. And in the meantime, the Blue Jays have at least one rotation spot to fill, it seems. And so, Bowden Francis ready to come back. He's sneakily a really important part of this staff after being on the injured list for the last month or so. Yeriel Rodriguez working his way back, but not quite ready. And you've got Trevor Richards, who's probably, in my view, got to be a candidate to at least be a tandem type option along with someone like Bowden Francis.
Yeah, welcome to the world of 29 other MLB teams where you have some uncertainty in the number five spot in your rotation. Like, we don't even know who's starting for the Pirates on Sunday right now. Because
or Friday. Did they announce their Friday, Saturday?
Yeah, I think that it's Bailey Falter on Friday and Mitch Keller on Saturday, I believe. That was the last I looked when I was prepping for this series. Could not find a Sunday starter anywhere. But that's 29 other teams. They don't have a lot of certainty in that spot. And a lot of other teams have had to deal with significant pitching injuries as well. Like, don't talk to the Tampa Bay Rays about pitching injuries or the Texas Rangers or 100 other clubs, right? Like, the Blue Jays have been very fortunate the last couple of years to have the consistency and quality and depth that they've had in their rotation. Like, it is very uncommon to just roll out like a top four of Berríos, Kikuchi, Bassett, Gausman, and whatever order you want to put them in. I just picked those names. I just listed those names as they came in my head. And they just make their starts every 5 days. And more often than not, they're really good. Like, this is very uncommon, very unusual, very special. So yeah, if the Blue Jays have to piece things together at the five spot going forward, that's something that a lot of teams have to do. I mean, the Blue Jays have 36 games in the next 38 days, so that makes things a little bit complicated, as does obviously Chris Bassett's health. I think that for now, Trevor Richards opening for Bowden Francis makes sense. How sustainable is that in the long run? We'll see. Like, how much stress does that put on the rest of your bullpen? And then, the knock-on effect of how much stress does that put on to the rest of your rotation, because they have to pitch a bit deeper into games because the bullpen is thin so often. We'll see. But when I look at the alternatives, when I look at the options right now, Yariel Rodriguez, not ready to go. Ricky Tiedemann throwing bullpens in Dunedin. Mitch White gone. Wes Parsons gone. It's essentially Richards Francis or Paulo Espino. So for the short term, I'm going Richards Francis.
Yeah, and I think it's important that Francis, if he is that kind of bulk starter, is paired with someone, at least to start. You know, going into this season a couple months ago, there's a lot of optimism around Bowden Francis. I bought into it, and what I saw from him in spring training was really encouraging. But then you get to the regular season, you saw how teams were game planning for him in the two starts he made, and he was a lot more hittable. And the hits were there, the home runs were a problem for him, he was walking more guys. If you go into a start knowing that Bowden Francis is going to pitch five innings and you're going to face him a couple times, he's not necessarily the hardest guy in the world to game plan for. And so this is where, if you introduce, maybe it's a Trevor Richards, maybe it's a Yenesis Cabrera who's opening for Bowden Francis as part of essentially a bullpen day. Yes, there's a toll there, but I think that given where the Blue Jays are in the standings and how important it is for them to win every game in front of them, or win a high percentage of the games in front of them, that it actually makes sense. You don't want to just toss six innings to Bowden Francis and hope and trust that he can figure it out.
And this is the beauty of Trevor Richards, is you can use him in so many different scenarios. Like, it's just such a luxury for the Blue Jays to have. Like, on Wednesday night in the second inning, he's like sitting in the bullpen in a hoodie having a coffee, and the phone rings and it's, "Hey Trev, you got to be on a big league mound in 30 seconds, facing, I know it's only the White Sox, but still facing big league hitters and executing really high intensity pitches." He's like, "Okay." And he just goes out and chews through 10 outs super efficiently. It was like 32 pitches, somewhere in that range. I mean, incredible what he did for the Blue Jays on Wednesday on zero notice, like just walking into a game and just like throwing these unhittable changeups and these fastballs located really well up in the zone. So he gets these like weak fly ball outs. Last year, we saw him step into the rotation as a like quote unquote opener. Although when he was starting, like he was going three innings regularly. He threw 65 pitches in one of his starts last year as an opener. He threw 53 in another. And oh, by the way, in between some of those starts, he was pitching relief outings. Like, he would start a game and then a few days later be coming out of the bullpen to pitch an inning, and then a few days after that be starting another game. He's just like so fungible, I suppose, so flexible, so versatile. Like, he just does not care. He's so level-headed and even-keeled about all this. Like, he just takes the ball whenever you ask him to. Start a game, finish a game, runners on, mop up, long outing, come in to get just a couple batters. I mean, whatever the situation is, like, it really doesn't affect him and the way he pitches and the way he goes about it. And it's just a really underrated thing for the Blue Jays to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And then behind the scenes, you know, you can see if Yoriel Rodriguez can get to a point that he's ready to help this staff, you know, sometime soon. He's rehabbing now, as we mentioned. Ricky Tiedemann, seemingly further off, not pitching currently, as he works his way back from an injury in the minor leagues. So it's going to put a strain on this Blue Jays staff. I mean, that is, as you mentioned, part of the challenge of navigating a major league season. The Blue Jays are not alone in this, obviously. Other teams have to figure this stuff out as well. But, you know, it's within the context of a team that has had really, really bad results from its bullpen all season long. 28th in the major leagues with a 4.77 bullpen ERA. So as we look at the bullpen for this ball club, what are your biggest concerns, if you see any, that you think the Blue Jays should have?
It's kind of been an evolving picture throughout the year. And I think, honestly, right now it's might be in one of the better places than it's been all season, really, because Jimmy Garcia is continuing to be Jimmy Garcia. I know Jordan Romano has, you know, had some suspect results lately and given up some hard contact. And, you know, I think there's probably room for us to have a more fulsome Romano discussion. But for reasons that perhaps I'll make clear later, I still have a lot of faith in him going forward. You just got Chad Green back. So you now finally have like another what you would hope is reliable late inning leverage option. Zach Pop has emerged as like a very real weapon for you in this bullpen with, you know, obviously the sinker, which he's now trying to work effectively away from righties. Then also that little cutter that he's throwing to lefties as well. It's an interesting weapon for him. Tim Mesa has really stabilized after some, you know, some rockiness to begin the season. And, you know, I just sang Trevor Richards' praises for 30 minutes. So, like, I feel honestly like the Blue Jays bullpen right now is kind of in as good of a position as it's been all season, as strange as that is to say.
Yeah, I still see some real kind of areas for concern for the Jays there. Not to, like, I agree with you that getting Chad Green back is good. I agree with you that Jordan Romano, he has better things ahead than what he's shown, even if the strikeout rate's down a little bit. I guess, like, my biggest questions as I look at this through the perspective of the Jays, okay, this is a group that collectively has allowed more home runs than any bullpen in baseball, the highest home run rate in baseball. They're not good at generating strikeouts. They're not good at preventing walks. So that's a pretty rough combination. And when you look at individual pitchers, because of course, you know, we're talking about this, you know, not, they don't pitch as a collective, they're individual players who take the mound. Someone like the left side of this bullpen, for example, Tim Mesa, velo down, ground ball rate down, results down. Yanis Cabrera, strikeout rate down, walk rate up, not good. Don't trust Yanis Cabrera. Can't really fully trust Tim Mesa. And so you got your big three, which I think you can trust in Green, Jimmy Garcia, and Jordan Romano. But other than that, I don't, and Pop has been, you know, he's shown some encouraging signs. But other than that, you know, Swanson being optioned, the guys I just mentioned from the left side, like, I don't know. It's to me, it's a pretty major question.
I think it has been, and it hasn't been good enough, and it's like clearly cost the Blue Jays games to this point. But when I look at where it was, you know, even just weeks ago when like Eric Swanson was pitching regularly and just leaving his splitter in really bad parts of the zone, when, you know, Tim Mesa's velocity was down even further than where it is right now, when Nate Pearson, I think, was more hit and miss, and they were kind of trying to figure out what situations they could trust him in a few weeks ago, whereas now they've kind of got him in a pretty good spot, and Chad Green wasn't even in this bullpen and Zach Pop was in Buffalo. I think that it's in a better spot now. I'm not saying it's in a great spot, but it's in a better spot now than it was a few weeks ago.
Let's say next week, okay, they're facing the Orioles. And let's say, you know, Berríos goes six innings, great start. Three Jays are up 4-2, okay? And you're in the seventh, and you've got the top of the Orioles order up. Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, Ryan O'Hearn, two left-handed hitters, one switch hitter. So naturally, that's a spot where you would be looking to a left-handed reliever. Like, who's that guy for the Jays? What do they do in that situation?
I go to Jimmy Garcia in that situation. It's the top of the Orioles lineup, and I want him facing the best hitters in the opposition's lineup. So that's where I go to Jimmy Garcia.
Okay. What if it's the sixth inning? What if Barrios' pitch count got high and then you're in the sixth inning, top of the order?
Yeah, I mean, it could be Chad Green there. And maybe you're trying to get two innings out of Chad Green in that spot. It could be maybe a Tim Mesa. Certainly, it could be a Richards. Yeah, yeah. You would have options.
Yeah.
None that would be slam dunk options. Yeah. Like, I don't think this is the best bullpen in baseball, Ben. Like, I don't think it's a top 10 bullpen. I don't think it's a bullpen that's going to carry you deep into the postseason. But, the Blue Jays are figuring some things out there. And if they are going to be a postseason club, and if they are going to buy at the deadline, which sounds like neither of us think is particularly likely, but if they are, they're going to need to be acquiring some relievers.
Right. I mean, that's every contending team is always looking for relief. And, the Blue Jays, if they can somehow go on a run and make it through that Baltimore series and, all of a sudden you're thinking more along the lines of buying, then, yeah, clearly left-handed relief would be on that list. I guess it's just like in the meantime, as you're trying to establish yourself where you are, that's something. And, is that nitpicky? I mean, I think every team cares about what kind of left-handed relief it has. And to me, the Jays just haven't displayed any sort of answers there now for a period of 2 months, and there's nothing in the Mason Fluharty, I'm not sure, put him in the same
cab as Spencer Horowitz up the cup.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just not convinced that that's going to lead to an immediate turnaround. So I see the bullpen as not only a problem that something that has contributed to their past struggles, but I actually see it as an issue moving forward.
Can we talk about Jordan Romano? This is just a statement of fact entering this conversation. For the last 3 years, Jordan Romano is second in baseball in terms of save conversion percentage. So how many of your save opportunities have you converted? Second to Josh Hader. So for the last 3 years, like if you needed a save, the only bet better than Romano to get you that save was Josh Hader. Like, that's just a fact. So, you start there, where this has been one of the second most reliable closer in baseball. Now, Wednesday night, he goes out against the Chicago White Sox, gives up a bomb. The velo was down. It was like 94, 95 around there. Clearly, Jordan Romano's got to be up to like 97, 98 to be effective. He was getting hit hard by the White Sox. That's not what you want. How much of that was like environment? There was like 15 people at that game. I don't know. Like, how much of that was just like an off night for Romano? I don't know. But here's what I do know. Jordan Romano has the highest stuff plus of any Blue Jays pitcher on his fastball this season. And he is top 30 in baseball. Like, the velo has been there prior, and the fastball is very good this season. The highest stuff plus on a slider for the Blue Jays this season, that's Jimmy Garcia. But Jordan Romano's right up there with him at 141. So the stuff plus on his fastball, 124, on a slider, 141. So like well above league average. The issue for Romano this year at times has been the location, has been where he's been leaving those fastballs and where he's been leaving those sliders. He's been catching too much plate. That's why his location plus is a 98 overall. So a little bit below league average. But if he can sort out that location and start like just getting off the fat part of the plate a bit more, he's going to go back to being the Jordan Romano who has been as reliable as any closer in baseball going forward. Like, I have very little concern with Romano right now, because the stuff is the same and it's still electric and it still plays. He's just working to locate it a little bit better.
Right. And yeah, that makes sense. I mean, certainly watching Jordan Romano, he's not someone who's really set off alarms in my mind. I think that we've seen so many good appearances from him in the course of the last few years. Like you said, the stuff broadly has been there. He certainly would deserve the benefit of the doubt as much as any reliever, even knowing that relief results can change pretty quickly from season to season, and that's not a category where you necessarily see that the same consistency that you might in other ways. But yeah, I think that makes sense, and he's not alone in the sense of the home run issues. Right, the Blue Jays bullpen, as I mentioned before, has allowed the most home runs of any bullpen in baseball, 32 bombs. And that is a lot of home runs. The Blue Jays as a team have only hit 49. Their bullpen's allowed 32. So, do the math. It's not a good ratio, considering the bullpen is pitching proportionally not that many innings. So, yeah, they've got to locate their pitches better. that's, you know, so easy to say from the outside, tough to do, but that'll determine a lot of how the results look moving forward.
And Romano's home run to fly ball is 22%. Like, in no way is that sustainable. Zach Pops is 20%. Eric Swanson's is 26.3%. Yenesis Cabrera's is 15%. Like, maybe Yenesis stays around there, but I think for Swanson, Romano, Pop, like, it's just hard to envision those three all maintaining a home run per fly ball of over 20% for the rest of the season. A couple things for Romano. Like, number one, he was making some slight mechanical tweaks during spring, just trying to be a bit more directional towards the mound, like trying to stay kind of stacked over his back leg and like not allowing his land leg to cross over his body, which can sap some velo, some location, some command, and also lead to some physical things. So I'm sure that's still kind of being sorted out, just to, in terms of location, why it hasn't quite been there. He also like is a guy who got a little bit predictable in recent seasons, and something like the Blue Jays are aware of and that he's talked about, he's aware of, is just trying to do things a little bit differently in certain counts and not falling into patterns and trends. It's tough when you're a two-pitch guy like Romano and like a Swanson, where it's like, I'm going to throw you one of these two pitches, and you know, how do you make it unpredictable? And how do you stay out of, I always do this with two strikes, or I always do this with 3-2 to a righty, or whatever it may be. So sometimes you've seen Romano this year go out and like only throw sliders. And I think he's just showing teams that he will do that, and that they can't just sit on one pitch or another, or assume that he's going to pitch to what his tendencies have been. You know, it could be something that was impacting Swanson as well. Obviously, the location wasn't quite there, leaving too many splitters up over the plate, but maybe got a little bit predictable himself as well. And like, if there's one thing teams are really good at these days, it's figuring out your tendencies, your tells, your tips, particularly when it comes to relievers with really narrow repertoires. It's like, it's why Jaime Garcia has such an advantage, because he's throwing like four or five pitches out there. Like, he has just such a deeper arsenal and so many different ways he can go. I feel like the Blue Jays have Jaime Garcia in just the perfect role right now, where they are targeting the leverage. They're finding like those 1-4 hitters in the opposition lineup and putting him into that pocket. If you look at like the splits for Jaime Garcia this year and like which batting order positions he's faced the most, it's 1-4. Like, the Blue Jays have gotten him in against the top of the opposition's order, and that's what they should be doing. They shouldn't be like moving him into the closer's role just because Jordan Romano's given up some hard contact. Jaime Garcia is in the perfect role right now for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, it's like how the Tigers use Jason Foley, but Jaime Garcia is better. So that's a good way to go. So I think that it makes sense that you know, there's probably some steps forward here for this Jays bullpen, where they can get better results as those home run rates start coming down. So let me ask you this. As we've talked about the rotation, we've talked about the offense, we've talked about the bullpen. If you're looking at this, again, as, you know, John Schneider, Ross Atkins, through that Blue Jays lens, which of those three areas is the biggest concern to you? Which of those three areas do you kind of say, I'm not super concerned?
Got to be the offense. And whether it can like sustain what's showed over the last couple of weeks against better competition, or whether, you know, once you start facing the Orioles and Guardians of this world, you just fall back into the old habits that we saw in April and that we saw a lot last season. Like, the Blue Jays have every reason to have as much confidence in their starting rotation as any club in baseball. We just kind of like went through like how volatile bullpens can be and how the Blue Jays are starting to sort some things out there, and how there's reasons to be optimistic that that group will be better going forward. But with the offense, I don't even, as we kind of said off the top, I don't know what to expect going forward. Like, it's so hard to project, like, what, you know, this weekend against the Pirates, Ben, like, what would you need to see from this offense to make you feel confident going into the Orioles series next week with, you know, if they're facing like a Burns, a Bradish, and a Grayson Rodriguez or whatever, that it was going to be better and that this team was going to be really well, competitive against those pitchers? Like, what would you have to see this weekend?
So I agree with you, first of all, that yes, the offense remains my biggest kind of question mark as I look at this team. What would I have to see? I would have to see three things. Alejandro Kirk taking velo pull side second deck a few times. George Springer, velo pull side, few home runs or extra base hits, doubles off the wall. And let's say for good measure, Vladdy gets into a couple and hits multiple homers. So if Kirk, Springer, and Vladdy all hit multiple home runs to the pull side off high-v-low fastballs, I will be convinced. Barring that, I will not be convinced.
But if they do that against, like, Bailey Falter, who's, I don't know, 91, 92, and is striking out no one this year, like, does that really convince you?
But right. If they do it off Bednar and Aroldis Chapman and Mitch Keller, and they happen to be facing 95, 96 off those guys, or, you know, if Kirk takes Chapman into the second deck, like, 2 days in a row, like, would impact how I view things.
Yeah, for sure. You need to see it against better competition, right? Like, just watching them against the White Sox for 6 of their last 10 games, I mean, that's just got to be some of the worst pitching that you're going to encounter in this league. Some of the worst defense as well, like, just from a sheer effort level and also quality, like, the defense played behind those pitchers is just, it's just bad vibes from that team all around it. Like, yeah. It is screaming at you as you watch them play, and then they're literally expressing it in the media in many ways after their games as well. So, like, it does kind of, like, skew the perception a little bit. Like, you know, it's great that Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has, like, gotten back into pulling the ball and has found a way to, like, get to some of these extra base hits and is continuing to keep the ball off the ground. I think, like, through the first, 6 weeks of the season, like, he had really lowered his ground ball rate, which was huge, but he'd also lowered his pull rate, which is not great for him. Like, you want him pulling the ball more than he was, and what he's done over the last couple of weeks is he's kept that ground ball rate low, so more line drives, more fly balls, but he's also started pulling the ball more. And if you kind of, like, imagine one of those extra base hits that he's had over the last, you know, week to 10 days, they're pretty much all to the left side. So if he can sustain that through Pittsburgh and through Baltimore, great. But, you know, I don't know that I'm going to be sold on, like, anybody in this Blue Jays lineup outside of, like, Vlad and Bo Bichette, who are just both just really, really good hitters. I don't know if I'm going to be sold on anyone but them until I see it happen against a better caliber of pitching.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to reserve judgment. And I guess, you know, like, I'm answering your question literally there. But by answering in that way, I'm also saying that, like, yeah, I think the chances are pretty remote that in a 3-day span, the Blue Jays are going to be able to do enough to really convince me that they're ready to deliver, you know, above average offensive results for the remaining 4 months of the year. I mean, I just have not seen anything to make me believe that. In fact, I have seen things like Justin Turner's May or Kirk's last 2 months that give me reason to doubt that they can do that.
And you know what? We're going to find out over June, because look, you got this 3-gamer against the Pirates start things off. Then obviously that huge 4-game series against the Orioles, honestly, at Rogers Center next week. Then you go to Oakland. So another little soft spot there, but then it's Milwaukee, Cleveland, Boston, Cleveland, Boston, Yankees, Astros, Mariners. I mean, it is just a gauntlet after you get out of Oakland. So we're going to find out throughout June. And I think we'll have a pretty good idea by, the end of that Astros series, which begins on Canada Day, of just what posture the Blue Jays are going to be taking at the trade deadline.
Yeah, we'll definitely learn a lot more. That's for sure. We learned a lot in May. It wasn't all great, that's for sure. But we learned a lot about this team. So we'll see. We'll see what awaits it. Any last thoughts here, Arden? City Connect, Blue Jays, anything else around baseball you want to get to before we step aside here?
I got nothing on that. What about you?
I actually have one question for you, which I don't know the answer to it. I'll say as a preamble. I don't know that anyone knows the answer to it, but do you think if home runs start to fly out of the yard a bit more as the summer months warm up, which is typically what we'd expect, do you think that that would be a good or bad or neutral thing for the Blue Jays if the home run finally, because, you know, offense has been down around baseball for the first couple months, pitching has been fantastic. Do you think that that would benefit, harm the Blue Jays, or somewhere in between?
Somewhere in between, right? Because obviously that means that they're pitchers are giving up some more homers. I expect the bullpen to give up fewer homers going forward. Perhaps you could expect the pitching staff to give up some more going forward. I'd have to look closer at it. I know that Berríos's ground ball rate has been, like, through the roof this year, which is a huge development for him, but, like, that's way off of his career average. So, you know, you kind of wonder if the shape of that contact changes, if the results change. But yeah, I mean, I think it would probably be somewhere in the middle. The Blue Jays would, obviously their offense would benefit by hitting some more, but their pitchers, particularly their starters, would start giving up some more as well.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. So on that note, we will leave it there for this week. And I'm sure there will be lots more to discuss in a week's time when we discuss that Pirates series and some of the Orioles series here on At the Letters. But thank you so much for sticking with us this week and throughout the season. Thanks as well to our producers, Sho Ali and Nick Andrade. And thanks to Arden Zwelling as well. We will talk to you soon on At the Letters.